Sportsnet today. Listen on the air, online, on the Sportsnet app, and always on your smart speaker. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Welcome to Sportsnet today. Riley Pollock with you as usual. It's just me flying solo for the first bit here. Logo will come in at some point in the second hour. Lots to talk about. Another busy night in the NHL. The Flames just one sleep away from their season opener. We have the ALDS and NLDS all set up and ready to go. And the Stamps were the big one this weekend as well. We'll touch on all that throughout the next 2 hours as I lead you up to the big show at 2 o'clock with Pat and Logan. But first, we talk to our Flames insider, Peter Loubardias.
Flames insider, Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Hello, Mr. Loubardias. How are you on this Friday afternoon?
I am just fine, my friend. I am just fine.
That's good. It's, we talked about a long week for the Flames, but this week's gone by fast for me. I don't know if it has for you or not.
Well, it's gone by relatively quickly. The days when you're my age seem to go by quickly regardless of what's going on. But, I would agree, Riley. There's been, both of us, I think, are pretty healthy sports connoisseurs. And, there's been lots of work and lots to feast your peepers on. In fact, this morning, the Flames are not skating today, but should note that Tyler Pitlick is on the ice right now, and if my eyes are not deceiving me, so is Connor Zeri. So that is a bit of a live Sportsnet 960 update as I sit in the stands and bring you this interview. So it was funny. You may have heard as well, Brad Treloving recently on Jeff Merrick's show, and it's like, okay, well, I guess the Calgary Flames are going to be allowed to be in the NHL tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess they are allowed to play, and that is nice for all of us. Before we get to them, just the NHL last night, Buffalo with one of their 16 wins early in the season. Montreal had no jump at all. Did you happen to catch any of that one?
I did not. I saw the highlights of the game. I followed along. I had a bunch of games going last night. I had Ottawa, Toronto on the go. I had the Nashville game on the go. I watched a pretty good chunk of the LA game against Vegas, and the Kings were very, very impressive last night. Mr. Kopitar and Mr. Doughty. Apparently, there's still lots left in those respective tanks. But no, I did not catch any of your group's game live.
Well, you didn't miss much. That's
for
sure.
There was this little baseball game too that I might have had some interest in as well.
Well, I figured that might be the case. Seattle picked up their first win last night. Yeah. This looks like a good little hockey team they got here.
Well, I think most people coming out of the expansion draft quite liked, how things set up for them defensively and in goal, and in watching about a period and a half of that game, Philip Grubauer was excellent, especially in the second and third. I believe the only shot on goal for Seattle in the third period was Brandon Tanev's empty net shot that made it 4-2, and then Nashville would score with 39 seconds left to pulled within one again before Seattle closed the door. But, lots to like there. They're going to work. Dave Haxtell is a good coach. I think he'll be an even better coach with all his experience, whether it's Philadelphia, his time in Toronto. He spent time with Canada at the World Championships in the last number of years. So, good Alberta guy who is always a pleasure to deal with. And, I think I mentioned it yesterday or the day before, Riles. Have to wait 5 or 6 before, I believe their opening night is October 23rd in their own building. And, boy, I can't wait to see what that show looks like.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that. One other game I want to touch on before we got to the Flames is the Kings and the Golden Knights, and LA comes out hot. Anze Kopitar with a hat trick to start his season and 4 points, and Drew Doughty with 4 points as well. I'm high on this Kings team in the Pacific Division. What are your thoughts on them in going into this season?
Well, they're a wild card for me. They're a wild card. You know, they made some moves this summer to suggest that the rebuild is retool, rebuild, whatever phrase. They want to be more competitive. You know, they still have some great core pieces. So, you know, they lost Quinton Byfield, unfortunately, due to injury. He wasn't ready to start the season. You know, they have some, they might have maybe not the deepest NHL prospect pool, but I would suggest in the top two or three for absolute sure. So, great start, beat a really good team. Sad to see Mark Stone go down in that game with what looked to be a groin injury, and that's a massive, massive blow. But the one guy I'm focused on, and maybe for different reasons, is Doughty. And why? I've listened to a couple of interviews. You know, I've been watching Drew play since, you know, he was a 16-year-old in the Ontario Hockey League. And he is beyond focused, I believe, to put himself in true contention, Riles, to play for his country again in another Olympics. And, you know, if last night is any example, he plans to, you know, I heard him talk about that there's been several predictions and lots of pundits. And, you know, that's a really hard job trying to pick this group of 23 to 25 guys that'll make their way to Beijing. But I think he's going to have a dynamite start. I really do. So, you know, with him and Kopitar driving the bus and others, and some of their younger players maturing and growing, they're gonna be a really fun team to watch. And I've been a massive fan of their head coach, Todd McClellan, who I've known being from Saskatoon myself, growing up watching him play, dealing with him, you know, going all the way back to his days in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League in North Battleford. So they're an intriguing team for sure.
Yes, they sure are. I'm excited to see them play. We are so close, Lou. Tomorrow we get to see the Flames in regular season action. It's an exciting time finally here for us covering the Flames.
Well, it is. And, you know, what a way to start. You know, the Oilers with a game under their belt already against Vancouver. They're a different group. And I didn't send this to you in the notes, but, you know, the Oilers have made some ads, and there's no doubt for me the biggest ad is Zach Hyman. And why I bring that up is, you know, I'm a massive fan of this player. I have been for a long time. He does everything you could ever ask. His work is exemplary. He's hard to play against. You can rely on him in all situations. And if you take a look, Riles, at the Oilers lineup, you know, right now they're back to playing the two big guns together on a line with Jesse Puljujärvi, who looks like he's finally coming into his own, and he always seems to play incredibly well against the Flames. But with Hyman there, and now your ability, you know, to move Ryan Nugent-Hopkins over back to the middle, you just have more depth, and you can play those other two together and not feel like you lose anywhere as much down the lineup. You know, many people thought, including myself, that, you know, potentially Zach was going to be Connor's new line mate. And, you know, who knows? We may see that about a period in to tomorrow night. And, you know, Dave Tippett just has more options, more flexibility. But when you add Fogle to basically, and you know I hate numbering lines, but you add him and what he brings in his group with Derek Ryan, and, you know, Hyman, I just think, gives that other group a lot more trust, stability, potential to produce. You know, they're a better team over there. They are a better team over there if, you know, their back end holds up.
Yeah. And I mean, that addition of Derek Ryan to fill that 3C spot is just huge for them, so Nuge can get up there. I really like how their forwards lay out, at least, you know, their top three lines anyway. And yeah, the defense is the question for the Oilers, it seems like. Speaking of defense, we've touched on him a little bit, but Rasmus Anderson, you are expecting big things from him this season.
I am. I really am. And, you know, when chatting with Daryl Sutter about Rasmus, I think the first 15 after Daryl took over were, you know, Rasmus is the first to admit it was a bit of a roller coaster ride, but his last 15 games were really good. This is still a young player, you know, experience, but I always find, Riley, you know, you need 300-400 games under your belt on defense before you really kind of understand all of it and your role, your capabilities. And, you know, Rasmus was elevated and had opportunities to do some new things, and that'll be beneficial this year. But, you know, if he's continued to pair with Hanifin, that's going to be such an important pairing for this group. Noah had a terrific season before his injury brought it to an end late in the campaign. You know, Rasmus has looked excellent, and I'm a big fan. He's competitive. You know, he'll talk your ear off. He's no fun to play against. He has some offensive upside. He's becoming a better checker and a defender with each and every passing year. He's a big piece. And yesterday, Chris Tanev was asked, hey, of all your brethren there on the back end, is there one guy that you think might take another big step?
Yeah, I mean, Razzy looks awesome. I think he's moving the puck really well. He's going to be up the ice all year, and I think we're going to rely on him a lot to create offense for us. Chili looks really good. He's skating well. He's moving up. He's getting up and down the ice. And then Uso hopefully takes that next step too, which we need. And I mean, as I've said before, there's eight of us here. We're all going to have to step up from how we played last year in order to be a playoff team and be successful.
Well, Lou, it's big praise for Rasmus off the top there, and he looked good. I mean, the last preseason game on the power play one there, he had 3 points in the last game, but this is just, it's a huge year for him, and if he has a big year, I'm sure the Flames will be at least fighting for a playoff spot.
Well, it's really essential that all the young guys on the back end, and they're still young, you know, elevate and take another step. And important for the team, and maybe even more important when you think about, you know, the leadership and the 24 minutes and touch every aspect of the game that you no longer have with Mark Giordano. But in the case of Chris Tanev, and I've said this publicly, there was no player I enjoyed watching more last season on the Calgary Flames than Chris Tanev. I just was blown away by his work every day, his toughness, you know, what he played with injury-wise down the stretch. They're just, you know, I can't put it any more simply. Most guys in the league just don't play. They just don't. They wouldn't have found their way to keep it going as Chris did. So, you know, he is the anchor of that group. He's the best guy in that group. I'm not sure how he's going to play much better, but a huge part, you know, and we'll see it tomorrow because it's a massive test, is Chris always seems to make the people around him better. You know, Noah Hanifin's the first guy to talk about that. You know, we saw what happened in Vancouver with Quinn Hughes and that pairing. He is just as steady, reliable, trustworthy. You know, they're really, really lucky to have Chris Tanev. And, you know, I asked him yesterday, what is it about you? And, he's not a guy that likes to talk about himself, which is another reason why he's such a good partner and it's not about him. But I asked him, regardless of the style, and now it's Nikita Zadorov, what is it about you that allows you to have that kind of effect on your partners?
I mean, I think it goes both ways, right? I'm trying to help my partner. He's trying to help me. And when you make a good partnership, that happens. I mean, I'm going to make mistakes, and I'm going to need my partner to help me out. He's going to make mistakes, and I'm going to need to help him out. I mean, it goes both ways. And when you sort of build that trust and that ability to do that, I think that's when you succeed.
Yeah, he's just, like I said, you know, I could even be today, Riley, where Olympic teams' big lists come out, the 50 list. Not sure that Chris is going to be on that list, but I sure hope he is, because I the way he checks, the way he defends, I think he's one of the more underrated defensemen in the National Hockey League. And I might be biased, but I've liked this guy forever. And he certainly did nothing last season to make me feel any differently. In fact, he upped my like of him, if you will, about 6 notches. And I didn't think there was 6 notches to go.
You didn't think you had 6 more notches to give with him?
No,
right?
No. Maybe that's a little high on the 6 notches, but man alive, I just enjoyed the daylights out of watching him go about his business.
Yeah, for sure. And for my money, the best defenseman on the team last year, and hopefully he can help out Zadorov this season. We'll see how that second pairing goes. Another player you wanted to chat about today is Elias Lindholm. He should be happy about starting against the Oilers, as he has been very good against them so far in his career.
Well, again, another player that I just have such high admiration and respect for, his consistency, his smarts. You know, on average, he plays a minute to a minute and a half more than any other forward. Made the transition back to center, you know, so well again. Tied for the team lead in goals, second in points. But against the Edmonton Oilers, last season in the 10 games, Mr. Consistency had 10 points. But here's a staggering number for you that even shocked me today, and I knew the career numbers were good. Riley, what if I told you that Elias Lindholm has 10 more goals against the Edmonton Oilers than any other team in the National Hockey League? He has 18 career goals against the Oilers. And you know who he's gone up against a lot of nights in that matchup. So
yeah,
that's incredibly impressive. And frankly, you know, when I put my judging hat on or evaluating hat on, you know, guys can have some big nights against, you know, lesser likes. But when you produce that way with that kind of responsibility, dealing with that group's best people, that for me stands out in a big, big way. Now, when it's 10 more than it is against any other group, that's a bit of an anomaly for sure. But absolutely no question that he's enjoyed playing against the Oilers. And you know, he, Johnny Gaudreau, and Matthew Tkachuk will start together tomorrow. And, you know, they will be a focal part, both trying to create and check the Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think, like, Lindholm's first couple seasons were with Carolina, too, and that's an East team. So
yes,
most of the goals have come with the Flames here. And hopefully he can continue that tomorrow night. One I did want to ask you about was about the bottom six. It's been a couple days. We just haven't had a chance to get there, but we've talked a lot about the top six. There's going to be a bunch of veterans in that bottom six. What do we expect from that group, and what do we need from them this season?
Well, I don't know if I can properly answer, Riley, because until, you know, Blake Coleman's second game of the suspension, and we get a chance to see him in earnest, you know, when the Flames take on Anaheim in their home opener, you know, and there's injuries, you know, Tyler Pitlick not available by the looks of things quite yet. No Brad Richardson. He starts the year on IR. So, you know, not trying to dodge the question, but, you know, what you need is good, solid, veteran, reliable minutes. That's what you need. And this group has people that are very capable of understanding, knowing their roles, and having played those roles very, very well. You know, when you talk about Lucic, when you talk about Trevor Lewis, Richardson when he comes back. You know, there's a lot of good options in that regard down in your lineup. So, you know, even if we look to tomorrow, if indeed, and I expect it to be, and it's why I don't always like to number lines, and I don't, because at the end of the night, to me, I always look at ice time and responsibility. And, you know, and the game dictates that too. But if you take tomorrow for an example and you have Backlund, Lucic, and Lewis, well, technically, I guess that's part of your bottom six, right? But that line in particular tomorrow will be incredibly important. Really, really important. Because with Michael there and Trevor Lewis and Lucic there, you hope to be able to play those guys, certainly, if not against McDavid and Draisaitl, you know, against the Hyman, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins group, yeah, which might free up the Monahan group to, you know, have a better matchup, depending on how the game goes. But the other thing about the Oilers is, Riley, because they're going to play that big group probably 22, 23 minutes, everybody becomes so essential, especially on the road, because they're going to look for every good matchup, especially that they can get in the offensive zone all night long. So it's critical, and it's going to be critical for this group all season long. And it's not necessarily about the scoring. It's about the checking.
Yeah, for sure it is. And if they can check well, it should translate into some positives for the Calgary Flames. All right, Lou, we've gone long enough. Before I let you go, your Dodgers, what a game that was last night, and it kind of went as expected, low scoring wise. I'm sure you were completely calm the entire time, but
No, I wasn't.
Just what you saw from the game yesterday.
There is a new hole in the floor in the basement that I occupy for 8 months of the year. You know what? It was a fantastic game. I think the two best teams in the sport this season, you know, 2-1, Cody Bellinger has had such a miserable season, you know, with a huge hit in the ninth. I did not like the call to end the game, despite the fact that it was beneficial for my group. Tough way to end it. Great series. Two excellent teams. It'd been a long time since the Dodgers and Giants met in a playoff series. It was a treat. The whole series for me was a treat. You know, even go back to, you know, game three at Dodger Stadium, the 1-0 game where, you know, Scherzer throws a gem. Longoria gets to him once in the wind, and Gavin Lux in the ninth. I thought it was out to tie it. It just is great baseball. I think playoff baseball, even though I'm not a big fan of how the game now is managed sometimes, or structured, or the shift, or even how the Dodgers started their pitching last night, that just, I don't like the game as much as I used to, but playoff baseball is so, so special.
Yeah, and the pitching might have been started weird, but what a performance from that group yesterday. 13 total strikeouts from the Dodgers. Scherzer comes in for the save. It was an interesting look in the pitching department, but Dave Roberts looks like he was smart with the way he went about it.
Yeah, they do some interesting things over there in Dodgerland where that is concerned, and sometimes over the years it hasn't worked so well, but last night it most certainly did.
Just three games on the NHL schedule tonight, Lou, before we let you go. Vancouver taking on Philadelphia at 5, and then we have the Devils in Chicago and Minnesota-Anaheim. Anything catch your eye from those three?
Well, I mean, every game always has a great storyline. I'm coming to the rink tonight to watch the Hitmen play, so that's going to be my nighttime main entertainment. Looking forward to that game here in this building tonight. I'm looking forward to watching Jonathan Toews. There'd be no way to tell you how big a fan I've been his entire career. Missed all of last season with a pretty serious health scenario. One of the greatest winners in hockey, in my opinion, in his time. So I'm really cheering hard for him and excited to watch him again and see how his season is after. Can't even imagine for somebody like him what last season would have been like. So I'm pulling for him pretty hard.
Lou, thanks so much for helping me out this week as I navigate the waters mostly solo. We will talk to you on Monday. Have a great weekend and have fun calling the game tomorrow night.
Well, indeed, and you as well, and be safe and healthy, and have a great weekend, everybody.
Flames Insider, Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Always great to talk to Lou. Can't wait to hear him on the broadcast with Derek Wills tomorrow night in Edmonton. Big game for the Flames as they kick off their season against the Oilers. All right, well, that will do it for the first segment of the show. When we come back, we'll hear a conversation with Craig Conroy from earlier today on Boomer in the Morning. I'm Riley Pollack, riding solo here on Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back to Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Today. Riley Pollack with you here downtown at the iconic studio. Busy night, busy weekend in the world of sports. We have NFL, CFL, a lot of NHL. The Flames start their season tomorrow night in Edmonton. That has kept us excited all week long. We were talking with Lou about the defensemen of this team, so I want to open this up to the text line. Which defenseman on the Calgary Flames is most vital to the success of the team this season? Give me your answer at 960-960. My answer is Rasmus Anderson. I think if he can take a step this season and really turn into that number one defenseman, the Flames will be in a good spot. So let me know your answer. Who will be the most vital defenseman to the Flames' success this season? 960-960. I will read your answers after this. We had a chat on the morning show with Craig Conroy earlier today. Let's take a listen on what the guys had to speak about with him.
And the Oilers and Flames will play Saturday. Assistant General Manager is Craig Conroy. Joins us on the phone. Connie, good morning, man. How are you?
Hey, good, Boomer. How are you?
Well, I'm good. We're getting ready. Did you guys do something to piss off Bettman or the schedule maker? How did this work?
I know, it's frustrating. I was in Vegas and then Anaheim and last night in L.A., so I'm like, wow, the season's up and going for me, and we haven't even played a game. It's weird. I don't know what we did to make them mad, but
you don't
I
want
can't
that.
Wait to get it started.
You don't want that at the start of the year either, do you? You've had training camp. It's kind of like, let's get going.
I know. Well, you know what? I mean, you have this break, so you know it's going to get condensed somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's going to condense it right away. Like, let's start. I'd rather start in early and then have a little break later.
Give me an extra day at Christmas or something. Like, come on.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not a great schedule. And then the home opener's on a Monday, which is frustrating, you know. So.
Yeah. So you're on the road. How are things in Vegas and Anaheim and L.A. so far?
I mean, good. I mean, Vegas was unbelievable. I don't know if you saw the pregame show.
Oh, yeah.
And they do it right there for sure. Like, it was pretty exciting. It was good to see Gio's first game, and you know, they battled back, down 3-0, came back, and it was good. You know what? It's you know, the buildings are full, you know, that building was full, and you know, the pretty good crowd in Anaheim, but it was a good crowd last night in LA too. So, you know, it's kind of back to normal. So we'll see how it goes. I'm looking forward to see what happens here on Monday with us.
It's been that crazy start to the season, right? Coaches and players haven't had a chance to adapt and shut things down yet. Because even that game last night, well, Kopitar, 4 points, 2 goals and 2 assists or whatever it was a wide open game last night.
Yeah, I mean, it was back and forth. I mean, you know, goaltending is a big part of it too. They pulled Leonard after the second. So, yeah, it was just, you know, I think teams are just getting ready. Even for us, we haven't had our full team in one game, even a start. And with Coleman having the suspension, we're not even going to, you know, you won't have it even to start the season. It's just a weird, you know, as many games as we played to say, oh, we didn't actually have the whole team in one game was, you know, it just doesn't happen.
Everyone's always excited at the start of the season, right? Everybody's got a chance. Everyone's got a shot. How would you, just from being around it, you've played for Daryl, you know Daryl. Not. It's not always balloons and gift baskets with Daryl. He wants it strictly business sometimes. How would you characterize or describe the training camp that you saw him put on? Are there similarities to when you and Rhett were playing, or has it evolved a little bit with him?
No, I would say it's pretty much, you know, I didn't know what it was going to be like. I mean, he's, you know, he's older, he's coached in LA, he's won cups, and it's pretty much the same. I mean, honestly, it wouldn't be, you know, it's funny, the same skating drills, the same, I kind of laugh when I, you know, when you see him, you're like, oh, nope, nothing's changed. I mean, and just his personality, I mean, he was, you know, he's all business, and, you know, every game, it was, it's kind of exactly the way I remember it. So, you know, the guys are focused and they'll be ready, and he's all business, and he'll be, you know, come Saturday, you know, he really, especially when we play Edmonton, he knows how big a rivalry it is for us, that he'll be, you know, he's fired up and ready to go, and he'll make sure the boys are ready to go.
Did you find, like, from afar, would appear, or it did appear, that training camp, it was kind of main team hanging out kind of together and hopefuls on kind of to the side. Do you like that approach, or do we see it right from where we're sitting? Is that how it was kind of treated? And did any of the kids stand out to you this year?
You know, I mean, I guess from my side, being, you know, watching everybody, I would have liked to seen in a, you know, some young guys put in with some veteran guys to give them that experience, you know. But it really was, you know, like you said, Rhett, there was 3 teams, and there was kind of broken into teams that, okay, this is the main group, this is the next group, a few guys are going to have a chance in that group, and then kind of the young kids were in that third group. So, you know, I would always love, you know, and for me and you, Rhett, you know, when you get to play with, as a young guy, your first camp, you know, you want to play with some NHL players. But if you're not with the NHL players, if you're with the junior players or the college players and, you know, or the American League players or with the All-American League players, it's, you know, the evaluation process for us a little bit harder because, you know, you want to see, I go to some teams where I see, you know, a young guy with 2 stars and the young guy, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, let's see how he does. But with our team, it was more pretty much the guys that were going to be on our team were on our team. And, you know, we practiced every day. So we didn't even scrimmage where we got to kind of see some of the other guys mixed in. It was all, you know, Daryl just said, hey, I want to start practicing with the team. We got a lot of turnover. I want to work on things right from the beginning of camp. And that's what we did. So I can understand why he wants to do it. But the management side, you'd always like to see the young guys, you know, get a chance with the big group. And, you know, I think there were, you know, surprises. I mean, definitely Walker Duehr was a guy that, you know, I saw at Minnesota State for a long time. You know, I wasn't sure, you know, he came in at the end of the year, but he had a great summer. Marty told me he was in great shape coming in. And then, you know, obviously he was there right till the end. You know, so he was a guy that really, really stood out for me. And Glenn Godden just played so well right from the beginning. I mean, he came in and worked, and it just seems like he kind of felt he knew what he needed to do. He was going to, okay, you know what, I got to finish checks, I got to win faceoffs, I got to do all these little things. You know, it's not about scoring or points or making fancy plays. I just got to play hard and show I can be responsible. And I think he did a great job too. So, you know, those were the two guys that really kind of stood out. And Shillington, right from the beginning of camp, put himself in a great spot. So, you know, it was one of those where you're like, okay, there was three or four guys that really, really jumped out. And I think the one thing is all the young guys were in great shape. I mean, if you look at the testing, you know, Shillington was third overall. Connor Mackey was fourth. So the young guys have really made a push where it usually was Gio and some of the older guys. I mean, Dubé was, you know, the number one guy. So that's kind of the way the camp went.
Does anyone show up out of, does anyone show up in Rhett Warner shape anymore?
No, I mean, no. You know, it's, you know, like everybody says, oh, even if, I think it's one of those where they just don't get out of, you know, not that they don't get out of shape, but you know, when it was like that, we guys were like, oh, you know, when I first got there, camp was a month long, it felt like forever. And guys did come in not great shape. They're like, oh, I'll work my way into it. Now it's just, you know, you get what, 3 days and then you're playing games. So guys just know, and they really do. I mean, everybody takes it seriously and they know we're watching and paying attention. So no, they were all, you know, pretty, you just look at the scores over the years, they've always gotten better. I'm going to have to go back and look at our scores, Rhett, and see how we can play.
I don't want to. I'm a bit sheepish. I remember I did the bike ride. I thought I was doing great, and I was 43. And then I think you're supposed to be over 60. Really nailed it. What about disappointments? What about disappointments, though? Was there anyone that, and not that, not give up disappointment, but like, I was hoping Rosie would get some reps or some games and kind of push. Was there anyone that you were kind of like, gee, I thought maybe we might see more?
Well, I think the guy that, I don't know about, you know, you definitely want guys to take a step, and it's hard. You know, it's always coming in, you know, you haven't played, the pressure, you want to do so much. I find, you know, a little bit like with Rosie, that maybe that's what it was. But again, like I said, when you play in those exhibition games, I watch all the teams, and if we would put Rosie, say, with Johnny and Tkachuk, or, you know, you always would like to see him with NHL players so you can get a gauge. You know, I think we just did it with young guys, so, you know, maybe they didn't pop where other guys are, you know, are with guys that, oh, they had two or three points. Well, yeah, you know, I think the Bourgault was with Doc Ryan the first year, you know, in Edmonton, and he had a goal and assist. He looked good, but, you know, it was really, you know, Doc was making so many nice plays for him, setting him up, put him in a good position. It's a little bit easier game when you have a guy that's been playing in the NHL for a long time. So I don't know if I really was, you know, disappointed. I was very disappointed that Zari got hurt, you know, so we really didn't even get to see him because I was looking forward to that. But, you know, overall, I mean, I think the guys did the best they could. We were all business. I mean, Daryl wanted to kind of play a certain way and certain guys and certain lines. So, you know, did we give him a ton of power play time? Did we give him a bunch of PK? You know, we really played the guys that were going to play in the power play and the PK most of the time. And we really didn't see a lot of the young kids or even the American League guys that maybe were pushing. You would like to see them put into a few better positions. But, you know, I understand, you know, that Daryl's wants to be ready for this game on Saturday, and that was his main focus. So, you know, that was kind of theme of camp for sure.
Tons of talk about Eichel and the Flames being interested. From your perspective, I mean, I think my view on the team is good depth, need guys to bounce back offensively, but still really don't have that number one big centerman that you just can count on consistently. And again, it's not a slight against the rest of the guys, but a guy like Eichel seems to fit the bill. Is there conversation? What are your thoughts on Eichel? Would he be a good fit? I'm not saying that you're going to go out and be able to get him, but is he a guy that you'd like to, you think would fit in here?
Well, I mean, anytime you talk about a guy like Eichel, I mean, he's a top five center in the NHL. So, you know, I mean, every team would say, this is a guy that we'd want, right-handed, big gates fast. But obviously, there's so much more to it. You know, first with the injury, what's going on with the surgery, all that stuff. But, you know, and that's one thing. Brad's definitely, you know, if it's him or different people, when there's names out there, you know, he's always involved and he's always trying to do something. Is it easy to make a deal for someone like that? Not really. You know, first of all, the money alone is a huge thing. You know, we're right up against the cap now, and to bring in a $10 million player isn't easy. But, you know, you're always looking to make your team better, and that's what Brad's trying to do right now. I mean, we, you know, just looking last night with the, you know, their first-line center is Stevenson in Vegas. And you think, okay, you know, is he a perfect first-line center? Probably wouldn't consider him a first-line center, but he works there, you know. And I think with Lindholm and Monahan and Backlund, kind of look watching these first three games, we have three really good centers, you know. And do we need them to, you know, maybe not? Well, with Monahan, I think with the injury all last year, we're really looking for him to bounce back. So if he gets back to form, I thought Lindholm, he just does his thing every year. I mean, he's reliable, plays well any position. You know, we play him a ton. He puts up points, so we have him, and then you have Backlund just being the way he is. If he can play the way we expect, shutting people down, playing hard, you know, we like our center position. You're always trying to upgrade, but, you know, for me, I know people say maybe we don't have, you know, we don't have McDavid-type guy in the thing, but we have very, very good players, and we just need them to kind of do what they do best. And if we do that, you know, offensively, I think – looking at the players that we have, I think we're going to be fine. On the back end, we have a lot of new guys, you know, especially with Gio being gone. I want to see how that plays out. For me, that's the, you know, more than the forwards, I want to see how the defense kind of come together as pairings and how they do. And, you know, knock on wood, Markstrom's been really solid, and I really like Vladar as he kind of went from the first game to his last game. So, you know, I think the question, Mark, for me is let's see how our defensing pairings work out and go from there.
Well, my big question on the back end is, what is Valimaki? I think I've got a fairly good grasp on what the rest of the guys are. Maybe not Shillington, but I mean, Branson is what he is, Zadorov is, like Tanev. I kind of know what these guys are. I'm still confused as to what Yusuf Valimaki is going to turn into or not turn into.
Well, I think, you know, for me, the one thing about Valimaki, he just wants to do so well for you. He's a pleaser. He wants to do everything right. He wants to do it. And I think a lot of it is either he's trying to do too much or too little. You know, sometimes I need him to actually get more engaged, more involved. It's almost like he's safe out there. I don't want to make a mistake, because if I make a mistake, you know, we need him to play hockey. We need him to get in there, feel that comfort level, make plays, you know, jump into the rush when he can. Offensively, you know, if he sees something, he can make passes, he can make plays. He's got to do that. You know, right now it seems like he gets the puck, he just wants to get rid of it. I don't want it, because if I make a mistake,
thinking,
you know,
too
I might
much.
Be the next... Yeah, exactly. And I think that's all part of it. But, you know, I think as you get in the NHL and you feel more comfortable and the coach has more confidence in you, you know, that's going to be the key. So, yeah, he's really a guy you're going to, you know, we're all going to be waiting to watch, you know, and Daryl's going to have to work with him, and Ryan Husk is going to have to work with him and make him feel more comfortable and just get him to play a simple, direct game, but have some confidence. And confidence is a hard thing, as you know.
How's Kirky Muller? Is he keeping it loose down there?
Kirky's great. Kirky's great. You know, it's just, I think you bring in a guy like that, with all that experience and, you know, coaching in all the different areas, he really seems like he has a good grasp and feel. And then, you know what? He's brought in some things in the offense where he wants to transition differently. He wants to, you know, instead of maybe just posting up, bringing guys back a little bit more. And the one thing is for Daryl to be like, okay, yeah, let's try that. You know, Daryl listens to him. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it is through the year, because you know how Daryl gets.
Yeah, if it goes well, that's fine. But it doesn't.
Yeah. Right now, everything was great. So, you know, I'll see how it goes when I get back. I'm going to miss the first, you know, the first game, but we'll be back for Monday to see the home opener.
Well, it's been good listening to you talk to Rhett. That's very happy with that. Look at you guys.
Feels like the locker room
just
again.
Cutting it up. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, well done. Take care of yourself, Craig. Good to talk to you, buddy. Enjoy the road, and we'll hopefully see you soon here, all right?
Okay, thanks, Boomer. Thanks, right. Rhett. Talk to you guys soon.
There you go.
There you go. Craig Conroy with the guys from Boomer in the Morning. Some good conversation there. The Flames in action tomorrow against the Edmonton Oilers, first game of the season. That one goes at 8 o'clock from Edmonton. We'll have it all for you right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, starting with pregame at 7 with Pat Steinberg and Peter Lou Bardius. All right, I asked you, the listeners, which defenseman needs to be the most valuable or be the most impactful to the team if they want to be successful this year. Got a lot of good answers. Rasmus is critical. If he doesn't have a much improved system, we drop off after Tanev and Hanifin, and the Flames are in trouble this year. That's one text. This one says Valimaki, since the Flames don't have any other player with even a remote chance of a top four spot. Valimaki or Shillington, says this texter. So that they can push Zadorov down to the third pair, then the team should be all right. Otherwise, they're in trouble. And then this one says Anderson may be the most impactful defenseman this year if he makes some steps forward. But in my opinion, Chris Tanev could be the quiet and steady anchor that will provide players with the confidence needed to make those improvements. Yeah, I agree with that one. I think Tanev definitely needs to be a great steady player again, but I think Anderson needs to be the most impactful, make that step, be that PP1 guy, and the Flames might just be all right on the back end there. Thanks for your responses. Keep sending them in. Who do you think will be the most impactful or needs to be the most impactful defenseman on the Flames this year for them to be successful? Text that into 960-960. I am live from the Iconic Studio, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Iconic is proudly owned and operated from Western Canada since 2008, and they take great pride in giving back to the communities that we all work and live in. Instrumentation, it's Iconic. Visit iconicec.ca to find out more. That will do it for the first hour of our show today, Sportsnet Today. Riley Pollack riding solo until probably about 1:30, when Logo will hop on with me before we send it off to him and Pat Steinberg for the big show from 2 to 6 today. Up next, we have Danny Austin of the Calgary Sun on to chat some Calgary Stampeders as they have a huge game against the BC Lions. That one takes place tomorrow at 5 o'clock from BC. The Stamps can tie the Riders for second in the West with a win tomorrow. They will have a game up on the Riders, but still a big rebound after a tough start to the season. We'll get his thoughts on tomorrow's game and much more Stamps related when we come back. This is Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back to Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Today. Riley Pollack with you as we continue the final hour of the week on Sportsnet Today. We had a lot of Flames talk in the first hour. We shift our attention to another team here in Calgary, and that is the Stampeders. A huge game with the BC Lions. Very big West Division standings implications tomorrow night when they take on the Lions in Vancouver at 5 o'clock. And to tell us more about tomorrow's game, we have Stamps reporter Danny Austin with us. Danny, how are you doing on this fine Friday?
I'm good, man. I'm in Vancouver. Won't surprise you to hear it's rainy. Nobody's asking, but I'm actually quite damp right now. So, you know, just deeply uncomfortable as we talk. It's great.
What took you outside in the rain today?
I wanted to go to a sneaker shop.
Nah.
I went and looked at shoes. Yeah, so there's very few things that get me out of a hotel, like looking at shoes. But yeah, that's what's up.
Well, you are very well known, maybe even more than your Stamps reporting, for your six shoe games. So I'm not surprised by that at all, Danny.
I appreciate it. I do not have the money for the shoe collection that I have, but you know, you got to make an impact somehow.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
In Vancouver, huge game tomorrow night, Danny. The Stamps can tie the Riders for second in the West, even though they'll have one more game played. But just what are some of the big implications that this game has for us tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, we're in an interesting spot in the season. The Stampeders have sort of salvaged a lot by beating the Riders twice in a row over the last couple of weeks. I think if we were talking a month ago, a lot of people would have said the Stamps are done. Like, this is the season's a wash. That's not where we're at anymore. The weird thing is, they still can't afford to lose. So they have a lot to lose, and they also have a lot to gain. But it's more if they lose any of these games. BC, they're trying to track down the standings. The Riders are close, but you just can't with a shortened CFL season, you can't fall back. So this game, you know, if they win, they're suddenly in a playoff position. You'd argue they're probably the hottest or second hottest, if not the hottest team in the league behind the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And there's a lot to be excited about, but a loss, it just puts them so far behind the eight ball again that there'd be, you know, real repercussions to that.
Yeah, for sure it would. And BC missing Lucky Whitehead, obviously. A couple broken fingers. That x-ray did not look good.
That was nasty.
We will not see Jake Mayer this week. He is in COVID protocol. Bo's been a little banged up this season, and he's come out of a couple games, and Jake has come in to replace him. Is Michael O'Connor ready if Bo has to leave the game like he has on a couple of occasions this season?
I honestly believe he is. I mean, it's been a tough go for Michael O'Connor. A lot of people were not only expecting, but some people, I won't name who, were reporting that Michael O'Connor was going to start when Bo Levi Mitchell was pulled because of that fractured fibula. And it didn't happen. The Stamps went with Jake Mayer, and he really impressed. So O'Connor was sort of knocked down the depth chart. But look, this is a guy, I mean, yes, he's a Canadian quarterback, and there are some people who are just going to automatically, you know, disbelieve in his abilities because of that. But the guy's been around the CFL. He's achieved a lot at the college level. And to be honest, I mean, he's got a great arm. He's been – I spoke to his head coach at UBC, Blake Nell, a little while ago, and he just said, look, this is a guy who's been – working toward this his whole life. So I'm excited to see it if he does get in. I imagine we're only going to see him on short yardage in case, unless Bo does get hurt. But look, Michael O'Connor, I mean, I'm not a scout. I'm not going to project what he's capable of, but I do think that he's played. The Stampeders aren't going to feel like they've automatically lost just if he has to get in for a few snaps.
Has Bo been a full participant all week?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'll be honest, like dating back a couple of years when Bo needs, he's a veteran. When he needs a day off or a day where he takes less reps, you give it to him. But, you know, Bo, it's weird. He pulled himself out of that first Riders game with what appeared to be a shoulder injury. We were all really worried. And then it was all much to do about nothing. He's been back. I'd argue that last weekend against the Riders was his best game of the year. I think there's real progress there. And I think ultimately, I think people should expect Bo to be, you know, I don't know if he can be the quarterback that he was in 2017, 2018, but I think he's looked better week over week. And this is a guy who had a long layoff and basically no training camp, which we don't want to say it's an excuse, but it might be a bit of an explanation for some of his performances earlier in the year.
Yeah, fair enough. And he did look very good against the Riders last week and until he got hurt in that game back here in Calgary as well. Kadeem Carey, what a game he had last week against the Riders. Speaking of good performances, just how important is it for this Stamps team to establish a run with Kadeem and keep him utilized in all facets of the game against BC this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, we've been waiting for it. I don't want to say we've been waiting for Kadeem Carey to, like, break out and show us what he can do. I just think we've been waiting for the Stampeders to give him the ball a little bit more. And then the nice thing about that game against the Riders was the Stamps sort of got up early, so they were able to give him the ball and run the ball with him. And we're going to see the Lions coming off a bye week. I'd expect them to have, you know, a few tricks up their sleeve in the early going here, so that might not happen. But, I mean, Kadeem Carey, like, guys, if you're not CFL fans, I mean, this is a legitimate NFL talent. He was a star in college. He's just, like, an exceptionally fun guy to watch play. And, I mean, he's got that speed. He's got that burst. But he also runs guys over. I put him right up there with William Standback as one of the two best running backs in the league at this point. I think he saw that last week. I mean, it was 168, 178 total yards between rushing and receiving. So I think they have a star in Kadeem Carey. And I think it's really exciting going into the tail end of the season that we finally seen it and that we might see the coaching staff have that confidence to call a few more run plays and just believe that he'll be able to get those 6-7 yards on first down.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with you. I've covered the team a couple times for Matt Rose when he's been on break, and Kadeem Carey just always seems like someone that's just about to blow up and then gets, you know, like eight touches in a game. And it's just hard to understand sometimes, but clearly he made the most of his opportunity last week, and we'll see if he can continue that on against the Lions this week. If you're the Stamps, what's the biggest challenge they face against this BC team this weekend?
I mean, a man named Brian Burnham, probably the best receiver in the entire CFL. I honestly think, I'm going to be perfectly honest, I think that the Lions are a good football team who has a record that happens to be sort of bolstered by the fact that they played the Ottawa Redblacks twice. And the Ottawa Redblacks are, while they are growing and probably not as bad as the Edmonton Elks, they're arguably the worst team in the CFL. So, look, I don't think the Lions have much of a run game. I think that they sort of had a two-headed monster in the receiving game with Lucky Whitehead and Brian Burnham. As you said, Whitehead is out with just a gruesome injury. But Brian Burnham, I mean, I think I was doing the calculations, and in the last nine games against the Stamps, he's averaging something like 85 yards. He is just the type of, like, he's so dynamic. He's so much fun. But that's going to be the challenge. I think that the Stampeders offense is capable of putting up points. I think we're seeing real progress. If they can cut out the turnovers, they're going to give, you know, really become something. But the defense is as good as anyone in the league, and it's just a matter of luck. There's one guy there. And that makes it sound like it's a simple task, but that one guy happens to be as good as anyone in the entire league. So I honestly, like, I don't want to oversimplify things, but I really do think if you can shut down Brian Burnham, you should be winning this game.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure he will get targeted a lot. They have James Butler, I believe, is in the backfield after a release earlier this week. Kamar Jordan, off of the Stamps roster again this week, he was seen at practice a few times. How close is he to getting back in that lineup?
He's getting close. I would not be surprised if we see him next week at home against the Riders. So the thing with Kamar, for people who don't know, he had an absolutely brutal knee injury. I mean, he tore three ligaments, I believe, in his knee in 2018. So I think that the Stampeders, knowing that, are just being careful with him, and they have to be careful with him. So he's dealing with a hamstring injury right now. Hamstrings are, like, particularly in football, where you're, you know, accelerating off the line, you're pushing, are notorious for keeping guys out longer than they want to be. They just don't necessarily heal in a predictable way. So, you know, Kamar Jordan, I'd argue him and Kadeem Carey are the two best playmakers on this offense. Kamar Jordan was leading the CFL in receiving yards when he had this hamstring injury. He's obviously a huge, huge, huge absence. But I will say, on the other side, what it's done is allowed them to sort of push other receivers into bigger roles, you know, gain that chemistry between Bo and those younger receivers. And I think that it's going to be good long term. So I expect KJ back next week. If he's not back next week, he's definitely back the week after that. You know, that's having spoken with coaches about what we're sort of thinking here. And when he does come, he's a huge boost. But I don't think his absence is an excuse for the Stampeders not winning this game.
It's not a great run game from BC so far this season. Going to be a lot of pass, as it has been all year, unless they completely flip the script. How do you feel the defensive backs of the Stamps fare against the heavy pass style with Mike Riley?
I mean, I think that, it's, to be honest, a little sneak preview, which everyone's dying for of my story today. I mean, I think that the Stampeders defensive backs had by far their worst game of the season in the Labor Day Classic. Sort of got shredded apart, and were kind of called out by Dave Dickinson afterwards. He said, like, look, we spend more money on our DBs than anyone in the league. We need them to be better than that. And I honestly think that they have been. The Riders don't exactly have the best receiving core in the league, so I don't know how much, you know, we can take from that. But in the last four games the Stamps have played, they've allowed two defensive touchdowns. I really think that we're seeing Raheem Wilson and Deshaun Amos kind of come together over on the boundary side. Jonathan Moxie's been a revelation. Honestly, I think that this DB group is probably the best in the league. The one thing that they're missing is interceptions. And, you know, coaches always say you got to win the line of scrimmage, and then you got to win the turnover battle. And it's sort of plagued the Stampeders this year that they haven't won that turnover battle. I think they have three interceptions on the year. That's, as Dave Dickinson said, that's not enough. But I honestly, like, I don't want to say I have full faith, because that's the wrong term, but I really do believe that this group is dynamic. They run a complicated defense, and they're getting better. So You can probably tell from the tone of my voice and sort of I'm repeating. I expect the Stampeders to win this game tomorrow, and I think that the defense is the biggest reason why. And I think those DBs are really coming into their own and helping out an exceptional linebacking duo in Darnell Sankey and Jameer Thurman, and then a D-line that's really improved.
Yeah, I wanted to get to the D-line. Mike Rose had 2 sacks last week against the Riders. That was basically it. But the 2 games against the Riders, they have put a lot of pressure on Cody Fajardo. Do you see a breakout against BC with how much they throw the ball and, you know, you're racking up 5-6 sacks tomorrow?
100%. I mean, you know this, but I mean, like, sacks are, like, you know, sacks are obviously something that we use to measure the success of a defensive line, but they don't really tell the whole story. Cody Fajardo, he's a slippery guy, man. Like, he's hard to take down. He's always moving. He's bouncing around the pocket. He's running. But the Stampeders did. I mean, they were chasing him down, dude. Like, it was almost every play. I mean, Mike Rose was just bullying the Riders O-line, which, to be fair, is terrible. But, yeah, I mean, I look at Sean Lemon. I think Isaac Adeyemi-Bargland, the Stamps' first-round pick in the 2020 draft, he's, again, when I say, I mean, he might be the most improved from week one until now of anyone on the defense. He's really playing exceptionally. You'd like to see him get rewarded with a couple sacks. But, you know, you say 2 sacks. It was unbelievable the way that D-line dominated the Riders O-line. And, yeah, I mean, it probably is time for a breakout and a little national recognition. And what you got to say, I mean, if this team's kind of in second place or jumps the Lions in third, and I haven't actually looked at the standings right in front of me, so I should have been careful with that sentence. But I think that you are going to see this group start getting recognition because they really, really have improved over the last month.
Yeah, it was – Cody was catching the snap and running away basically every single play the last 2 weeks. So, and then just one more from me here. How crucial is it for the Stamps to have a kicker that they can trust in clutch situations when it seems like bad kicking – seems to be a problem across all of pro football, especially this season? It's been brutal in the NFL. It's been brutal in the CFL, but Rene Paradis just continues to do what he does.
Yeah. I mean, you less than 40 yards, less than 45 yards. You just know he's money every time. He's been doing this for what, a decade now. And it's such a source of, you know, you can just, the coaches don't need to worry when Rene Paradis goes on out on the field. And as you said, like, thank God you're not asking me what's wrong with kicking across North America, because I can't explain it, but it's been awful. And, you know, Rene's just out there calmly and casually doing his job, not saying much about it. And, you know, he is doing it in pressure situations. I mean, they won on a last second field goal last week. So Rene Paradis, I don't know that we ever fully appreciate kickers the way we probably should. But I do think that, you know, the hardcore Stamps fans around Calgary know how good he is. And I'm glad you asked, because it's good to highlight, because he's just one of those guys, because he's so reliable, we don't talk about him enough, right? And he deserves to be talked about as, you know, one of the best, if not the best, that we've seen in the last decade.
Yeah, absolutely. He is just automatic, and that penalty last week did nothing to hinder him. He just moves back 5 yards and drills another one. So, yeah, I'm with you. I have the Stamps outright to beat BC tomorrow. Unfortunately for them, I'm very bad on predicting their games this season. So sorry to all Stamps and Stamps fans if I somehow jinx that. But enjoy Vancouver, Danny. Enjoy the game tomorrow, and we will catch up soon.
Thanks, buddy. Super appreciate you having me on. We'll talk soon. Cheers.
All right. There you go. Danny Austin down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come on in and enjoy hockey and football game day specials. Health protocols in place. Pickup and delivery also available. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Danny Austin joining us from Vancouver. He covers the Calgary Stampeders for the Calgary Sun. Great information. Him and Matt Rose just do such a great job with this Stampeders team, getting the info to the people that care here in Calgary. Should be an exciting weekend of football. Just 3 games after the 5-game schedule last week. Tonight, the CFL Week 11 kicks off with Winnipeg against the Edmonton Elks. Expect the Blue Bombers to roll through the Elks there. Cornelius starting for the Elks. Trevor Harris is benched and reportedly on the trade block. So watch for that in Edmonton. Zach Claros continues to roll. He is probably the MOP front runner. Tomorrow, a doubleheader to wrap up week 11. It's Montreal and Ottawa at 2 o'clock. Matthew Schill's probably starting for the Alouettes as Vernon Adams is on the 6-game injured list with a broken bone in his shoulder. That's not good. Ottawa's looked all right these last two games. Haven't picked up a win, but kept it close with Montreal and Toronto last week. And then to wrap it up, 5 o'clock, it's the Stampeders and the BC Lions from Vancouver. Huge game for the Stamps as they look to continue to crawl their way back up the West Division standings. All right, that will do it for the Stampeder segment here at the 1 o'clock. When we come back, Logan Gordon should be joining me. We'll see if we can connect with him as we chat about the NHL last night, the NHL today, Charlie McAvoy's new huge contract in Boston. We'll break down the ALCS and NLCS, probably give our picks, I would assume. I didn't do too well in the first round of playoffs picks, but oh well. And we'll chat a little bit more CFL and look ahead to the NFL schedule this week as well. That and a little bit more when we wrap up the show in a few minutes' time. This is Sportsnet Today. I'm Riley Pollack. You're listening to Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back to Sportsnet Today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Final segment, Sportsnet Today. I'm Riley Pollack. I've been with you all week long. We're finally at Friday. It's been a good week of sports. We've got to see regular season hockey since Tuesday, and the Flames finally get their crack at Game 1 tomorrow in Edmonton at 8 o'clock. We'll have that for you right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, of course. There's many ways to listen to Sportsnet 960, The Fan. You can listen to 960 AM on your radio, stream on your phone, tablet, computer at sportsnet.ca/960. Tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960. You can download the Radio Player Canada app or the Sportsnet app, and you can listen to Flames Radio on Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, the Flames app, or the NHL app. Well, there were some big games not in the hockey world last night, and one ended with a little bit of controversy.
The 0-2. Check swinging a ball down and away. He went, and it's over. Wilmer Flores strikes out, and the Dodgers are moving on. The defending champs eliminate the Giants, and they win it in Game 5. 2-1 the final score as they mob Max Scherzer on the third base side of the pitcher's mound. The dugout emptying out. And Max Scherzer is pumped up. 2-1 the final here in Game 5.
It's a bad way to end a Game 5, but, I mean, a lot of people saying that ruins the game. San Fran had 9 innings to put more than one run up on the board. Yes, umpires are not good. It was a bad call, 100%. But, I mean, you can't score one run against the Dodgers and expect to win, so tough call for sure. The Dodgers advance to take on the Braves in the NLCS. That should be a good one. I expect the Dodgers to win. On the other side, it is the Red Sox and the Houston Astros. That game, the ALCS, goes tonight. That one in Houston at 6 o'clock. Oh, this is such a tough one to decide who I want to win. I do not like either team. I know Logan Gordon, who will be joining us shortly, is going to be cheering for the Red Sox begrudgingly because of just how much hate he has for Houston. It's a tough call. I personally feel like maybe the Red Sox have just caught some lightning in a bottle, and it could be a Red Sox-Dodgers World Series, which I don't like either team. But that might be the case. So San Fran knocked out in Game 5. It's a tough way for them to lose as they had won 109 games through the regular season and the playoffs. But the Dodgers, a very good team as well. They were just one win behind them in the regular season. Week 6. Oh my goodness, already Week 6 of the NFL season kicked off with the Bucks and the Philadelphia Eagles last night.
40 seconds left, first quarter. Fake the handoff to Jones. Brady, pump fake. Flushed out of the pocket. Looks, waits, throws. Catch made at the five. Catch and curl. Antonio Brown dives in. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Brady to Brown, 23 yards. And the Buccaneers regain the lead.
Yeah, it win for the Bucs 28-22. A big comeback from the Eagles. It seems like they go down early and then try and get the points back. It did not happen for them last night. Tampa Bay with another win. Tom Brady picks up another win as well. 297 yards passing, two touchdowns, one interception. Jalen Hurts, not a great stat line. 12 of 26. 115 yards passing with one touchdown and one interception. Leonard Fournette with the best game by a running back for the Bucs this year. 81 yards on the ground and two touchdowns. They've had a lot of trouble running the football, but that was not the case last night. Tampa Bay now 5-1, first in the NFC South. The Eagles fall to 2-4. Peter Loubardius mentioned that he was... going to the Hitman game tonight. They play tonight as well. As Logan Gordon, are you there? Have you joined me?
Hello, Riley.
Oh, I was so lost without you. We were just talking about the Bucks and the Eagles from last night, and I thought maybe the Eagles were going to pull off a comeback for the second straight week, but they just fell short.
It's too bad. The Bucks kind of got up to that 28 points, and they just kind of fell asleep for the rest of the game there. I guess it's hard when you've won Super Bowls and you can take those risks that other teams don't. Kind of we saw the Chiefs do that for a couple of years, right? The last couple of seasons, they just get up big and kind of get interesting at the end, and they still pull out the win. Yeah, kind of hard to stay motivated for the regular season, I think, sometimes when you're so focused on being a playoff team. I think that's kind of where the Bucs are.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, Jalen Hurts was not good with that 12 of 26 stat line, but... they almost did it again, just fell short. I was just about to start talking about some local sports that we could maybe keep an eye on tonight. The Hitmen in action tonight, logo. Peter Loubardius sighting, possibly, if you go to that one. As he mentioned, he was going to go to that game tonight. They take on the Red Deer Rebels. And there's another one. It's, you know, I kind of have to mention it, logo. The University of Calgary Dinos men's hockey team kicks off their season at Father David Bauer tonight. Some guy named Riley Pollock will be doing the play-by-play.
Wow.
So instead of having to listen to that, why don't you just come in person? For my money, it's the second highest tier of hockey in this city, and I don't think it gets enough respect.
Well, I think you should do both, to be honest. I think... you should have everybody there in the stands, but I think they should be listening to your call. They should get it through their phone or something like that, because I can only see that improving their experience.
Yeah, I agree. And they take on the University of Manitoba. And if you are a Hitman fan but are planning on not going to the game, there is a whole bunch of ex-Hitmen on the University of Calgary Dinos this year. Peyton Krebs is there. Riley Stotts is there. Carl Stankowski and Nett is also there. So it's a tough one to decide between the two if you're a Hitman fan. I mean, do you want to watch the old Hitman or the new team this year? It's going to be a tough decision.
Yeah, no wrong answers in all of this, let's be honest. You can do either one, support some local sports either way. It's nice to be able to go back and actually watch some sports. I think that's the best part of all of this.
Absolutely. It was a busy night in the NHL last night. 9 games on the schedule, logo. Seattle picks up their first win as a franchise, and through 2 games, I've liked what I've seen from this Kraken team.
Yeah, it's hard not to. I think that they're doing a pretty good job forging out that identity, and it looks so far so good. They've been able to score enough goals to keep them in both games and enough to win one here against Nashville last night. I've said it throughout the week, Riley, with a lack of skill, you have to have a group that's willing to work hard for those goals, and so far Seattle's been able to do that, and they've been successful enough. They've got a good goaltending group. I think you can look at that defense and feel pretty good about them on a night-to-night basis, but the forward group leaves some question marks, and I think we're still waiting to see what they'll look like at full power. Whether you get a Yanni Gord back in the lineup sooner than later. I know he's dealing with some injury stuff right now, and It's hard to bring a group like that together, but if you can get everybody on the same page and on the same mentality offensively, I think you can lead to some success. And you're seeing guys, you know, Brandon Tanev picks up a power play goal and then the game winner late in the third. Brandon Tanev wasn't a power play guy with the Pittsburgh Penguins. That's just not the role he was asked to be in his former team, but here he's getting that opportunity. It's what helped Vegas when they came into the league, Riley, was, you know, guys making the most of a new opportunity with a new team. And if Seattle can capture some of that magic with a couple of their guys, they'll be all right at the end of the day.
Yeah, they certainly will be. Like the team, I agree with you that the forward group is the question, but we'll see if we can get some Golden Knights-style breakout players this year. The big one, not a great one for the Habs last night. They looked flat and bad, and somehow the Buffalo Sabres beat them 5-1 for one of their 16 wins on the season.
Tough one, but I think Buffalo has that sort of sense about them, Riley. They might catch some teams off guard if you're not prepared and you don't take them seriously. I kind of get the sense that that's what happened with Montreal last night. They walked into it not thinking much of their opponent, and I don't blame them necessarily. When you look at that lineup, you kind of have your questions about it because it's not a typical NHL lineup. It's not full of guys that you know. There are guys that probably in most situations around the league wouldn't be playing on a nightly basis, but that doesn't preclude Buffalo from having skilled guys and from having guys that are motivated on a night-in and night-out basis, because that's just, you know, they're still professionals, right? They're still getting paid like everybody else. They want to be involved like everybody else, and they don't want to be the laughing stock of the year. They know what their future holds for them, and it's probably not a great season. But if you overlook them, I think you're going to reach into some trouble, and I think that's kind of what happened to Montreal last night.
Yeah, they were brutal. Took a lot of penalties, which was a problem last season for Montreal, and Buffalo capitalized on the power play. So not a good start to the season for the Montreal Canadiens, 0-2 now. Ottawa was off to a good start, 3 goals in the first period, and then kind of just cruised against the Toronto Maple Leafs to a 3-2 win.
Interesting one. I know Maple Leafs land is not happy as usual early on, but I think the bigger question in all of this is the health of Peter Mrazek, who leaves that game and forces Jack Campbell to come in and finish up. A lot of shot volume for Toronto, but not enough to get the win. There's still questions about this team as a whole. I know they didn't have Austin Matthews. They haven't had him. They won't have him for this week, but a tough one. The Senators team, even without Brady Tkachuk last night, I think they still have a lot of the same qualities they had last year, Riley, and it's not dissimilar to the Buffalo situation, right? You overlook them, they're still going to be professional. They're still going to go out and try every night. The results might not be there the majority of the year, but overlook them at your own peril, and they certainly have some talent there in Ottawa that I like quite a bit. And there's a rivalry there too, right? Just because the Maple Leafs have all these high expectations and the Senators don't, doesn't mean you're just going to bow over to Toronto on a night-in, night-out basis. It's Ottawa's home opener. I think sometimes the pride of guys gets forgotten in all of these conversations. Ottawa doesn't want to lose to Toronto and doesn't want to look like the, you know, the chump team that they've been the last couple of years compared to the big shining stars in Toronto. I can't say I'm stunned by it because Ottawa's a growing team, and if you don't go out and play these guys the right way, you're going to run into nights like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ottawa's not going to be easy to play against. They weren't easy to play against last year unless you were Edmonton, and it's not going to get any easier now. And Brady Tkachuk was the first one on the ice at Sens practice today, about 15 minutes early, so we'll see if he draws into the lineup. I believe they play tomorrow at 5 o'clock against the Leafs again. So I would assume he's in tomorrow. Would you?
I maybe, yes. I guess it all depends on what kind of shape he comes into camp with. I would assume, like most guys, keep themselves in pretty good shape year round, but you never know, right? Has he been spending a lot of time on ice? I don't think there's any problem. He's been around the team before and probably slides right onto a line that he's familiar with, but I think a conditioning question is one. You don't want to ever have a guy come in who's not quite ready and then maybe get hurt because of that, especially a guy you just signed to a 7-year contract. I think they'd like to have him in the lineup. It all depends on really how much shape and how much ice time Brady's been able to get away from training camp and away from practicing with the team.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure he stayed in shape, but is he ready to go with the team? That will be another story.
Yeah,
we'll find out tomorrow.
Game shape and you know, general shape are different.
100%.
Different things when it comes to hockey.
It was an emotional night in Columbus last night, and they come away with an absolute beating of the Arizona Coyotes, 8-2. Oliver Bjorkstrand with 2 goals, 2 assists to lead the way. Elvis Merzlikins wears number 80 in honor of his fallen comrade, and they come away with the win. And it was, I mean, I watched the opening ceremony that they had there, and it was tough to watch for sure. But nice for the Blue Jackets to get that win on home ice.
Yeah, it was. We all know what happened in the summer for the Blue Jackets and losing their teammate like that. It's never easy, and there's a lot of emotion involved with that, and having his number 80 now in the rafters there in Columbus, and you know, having it behind the net for the goaltender. That's a very hard thing to do. It's a very hard thing for everybody to relive and to jump into. Hockey feels secondary, but we know the show must go on, and they did himself a great favor. You think you want to look back at those nights and say you gave it your all and look back at it as a happy memory. And when you have an 8-2 victory like that, you're absolutely going to feel that way. And props to all those guys for going out on an emotional night like that and showing up and making it a good memory for themselves. I think that they deserve a lot of credit for that. It's a hard situation to throw all of that, you know, personal stuff on top of it. It is hockey at the end of the day. It's important, but it's not, you know, as important as the relationships and the people that were around. You get reminded of that in those situations like you did last night in Columbus. So good on them picking up a big win. 8-2 was surprising to see their offense explode like that, but good on them. They put on a show for the fans.
Yeah, they sure did. And one more I want to touch on before we get into tonight's schedule and into the NFL this week is the LA Kings, 6-2 over the Vegas Golden Knights last night. Good showing for Los Angeles, and it's a team that I think highly of this year. For some reason, I have them as a playoff team out of the Pacific.
I don't think you're alone in that. I think that there are people that feel good about this Kings team. We've seen different variations of the Kings teams and some of these other teams around the league, Riley, that I think you're looking at and having different levels of success trying to maintain a playoff approach or a competitive approach after a couple of years of not being successful, after years of coming off of Stanley Cups. I don't think it's that much different than looking at Pittsburgh or looking at Chicago or they're both trying to do similar things to what LA is trying to do, right? They had a core that was very successful for a long period of time. Then guys got paid big money contracts, and it's a little bit harder to fill out your roster when you've got guys making as much money as a Doughty does, as a Kopitar does, same as a Crosby and Malkin, same as a Kane and a Taves. But LA's been able to really revamp the system with some young guys that are up and coming. I think that they've got things figured out in goal with Cal Peterson as their guy there. And look, Anze Kopitar, despite the lack of success for the team the last couple of years, has still been a big proponent and is still a force down the middle. And I think a team like Vegas specifically is going to struggle against a team like LA, who goes out and gets Philippe Deneau from Montreal. They're deep down the middle, whereas Vegas, you know, no offense to Chandler Stephenson, I don't think he's a number one center. So when you get asked to play up against a guy like Anze Kopitar and then Philip Deneau is the second one off the line, they're going to cause problems for guys. So I think we'll see varying levels of success from those teams, Riley, like LA, that are trying to get one last push out of this group. But so far, so good. You kind of have to like what the Kings have built there. And I wouldn't be surprised. I think a lot of people probably feel the same way that you do in that, you know, the Kings have a chance to surprise some people.
Yeah, they sure do. 5 points for Kopitar to start the season last night. 4 for Drew Doughty. Doughty making a push to be on that Olympic roster again. Hey, logo.
I would say that's the goal for for Mr. Doughty. No doubt, that's kind of been his MO. I don't think he's made any bones about it that he's not happy to hear so many people so keen to push him so quickly out of that conversation. I think he's still going to be in the conversation. And when I initially talked about, you know, Team Canada, I don't know that over the last couple of years I've seen him there, but I think there's a factor and a point where you talk about all of this is, you know, building up to him potentially having that sort of season where he makes that impression on Canada. And I don't think it's lost on the Team Canada brass that he's been a member of that team before. But I do think he's going to have a year like that to kind of show people he's still got that potential. I think it's going to be a big motivating factor for him, and we saw it night one last night for LA.
Yeah, for sure. Three games tonight, Chicago, New Jersey at 5, as well as Vancouver, Philadelphia. Then at 8 o'clock, it's Minnesota and Anaheim. What I take away as the big story from those three is we get to see Kirill the Thrill and his newfound contract do what he does. We'll see if he can continue on his rookie season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Minnesota finally getting their season underway, and same with New Jersey and Philadelphia tonight. But Minnesota was a team that you could probably pretty easily push off of your radar. I don't think it would have registered for a lot of people going back the last couple of years. Oh, Minnesota's got their home opener or their season opener in Anaheim tonight. Yeah, it wasn't really much of a thing. You didn't. I think it changes. It's more. I'm more tuned in. I'm going to be more dialed in to see what's going on with Kaprizov and the rest of that team as they try to be a playoff contender again this year. And he's changed the face of Minnesota hockey, right, Riley? We wouldn't be talking about that game most years if it wasn't for him coming in and giving them that dynamic offensive threat. I'm going to be curious to see how that plays out for them and if he can continue that into year two.
Yeah, I am interested in that as well. Well, Logo, we are one sleep away from finally getting to watch some regular season action for the Calgary Flames. They take on the Oilers tomorrow at 8 o'clock. I asked the text line this question today. I'm going to ask you as well. Which defenseman on the Flames do you think needs to be the biggest impact maker on the team this year for them to be successful? I went with Rasmus Anderson just because I think he's going to get that shot on power play one. He's going to get that shot on the top pairing with Hanifin. I think if he takes a step from last season, this team is going to be in a much better position than they were last year.
I don't disagree with you. I think my initial thought when I hear the question is Chris Tanev. There were so many questions last year, Riley, around free agency when we did these conversations about, you know, the good of Chris Tanev and how well he plays with everybody, and we saw that, but there was so much too of he's never durable, he's never healthy, and he changed a lot of people's minds with that last year. He played through a pretty significant rib injury throughout the year and was a constant force on that, and quickly pushed himself into the captain's conversation around here, which I think gets forgotten a lot of the time, that he's only a one-year member of this team, and for having people to, you know, consider him in that role after just 1 year, I think speaks a lot about not only the player, but the person that Chris Tanev is. I lean towards him because I think the Flames need as much, if not more, from him this season. He certainly helped Noah Hanifin take that step last year and has given Noah and the coaching staff that confidence to push him away. But so far in this preseason, there's been questions about everybody except for three guys, right? Except for Anderson, Hanifin, and Tanev. Well, they kind of need Tanev to work some of that magic that he has with those partners, with Nikita Zadorov again, right? They kind of need him to help bring along, whether it's Zadorov or somebody else throughout the year. Right now, it looks like it's going to be Zadorov, but I think they're going to need him to bring somebody else along and really fill into that top four spot along with him. And I think it helps having a guy like Tanev who's continually pushing his partners and continually making guys around him better. So I'm going to go with Chris Tanev for all of those reasons because he was so important. I think with Gio gone, he assumes even more responsibility on that back end as sort of the elder statesman of the group. And I'm expecting another good year from Chris just based on everything we saw last year and through preseason. He looks like the same old guy that he's been throughout his NHL career, just steady and reliable, and the team needs more of that.
Yeah, and I really like that answer as well. I don't think there's a wrong one, and it was pretty 50-50 with Tanev and Anderson on the text line today. We had a few shillingtons, as some people want him to be able to jump Zadorov into that top four. Valimaki as well for that exact same reason. So a little bit of those four. I think Hanifin got mentioned a couple times, but I think he'll kind of just be the same steady guy that we saw from him last year. So I think I really think the Flames need Anderson to take that next step. this year, and Tanev to be that steady presence. So I like both of our answers, Logo.
I think it's not far off, Riley, to say that almost any answer applies for a group that has a lot of question marks like Fair. This one. Like, we've had so many conversations about them. I think you can look to a number of guys. You can look to the old guys that we're used to seeing here as ones that need to take another step forward with a guy like Gio leaving. You can look to the new guys to fill in those roles, the Gudbransons, the Zadoras, and then you can look for the young guys in the organization to take that next step and be consistent NHLers, which we haven't seen at this point from Shillington or from Valimaki. So I don't think any answer is wrong when you look at it from the Flames' D point of view. They're probably not a group within this team that's going to have as many question marks as those six or eight guys.
Yeah, that is 100% fair. Before we go, I'm not going to run through the whole NFL schedule with you because that would take too long, but I did pick out two games that I would like to chat with you about, the two that I think are the biggest ones of the week.
Hit me.
Starting Sunday morning, your Chargers taking on the Baltimore Ravens, Logo. This is a big one. Baltimore's had a decent couple of weeks. They've gotten past a couple teams that maybe aren't that good, but at the end of the day, they're 4-1. And Justin Herbert and the Chargers look very good as well. What are you expecting from this heavyweight tilt?
I have a feeling it could be another offensive battle between these teams. We saw Cleveland and LA put on a show. I'm not quite expecting it to be that level because that was a whole different level of madness last week that we saw, but I expect it to be similar. Lamar Jackson is a dynamic quarterback and creates a lot of problems that teams don't have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, so it's hard when you've got a week to prepare for this sort of guy. We don't see him all the time being out of division, so I think the Ravens present a number of challenges offensively for any team going up against them, but you know, Justin Herbert has come in and given the Chargers an offensive threat every single week. It doesn't seem to matter who he plays. He's found success through the air. Can the Ravens be a team that, you know, steps up and finds a way to limit Herbert and stop him defensively? It's a battle of two 4-1 teams in the AFC, Riles. It's hard not to get excited for this one on Sunday morning.
Yeah, it'll be on my computer for sure while Red Zone goes on the main TV. And then the other one that I saw was an afternoon game on Sunday, and that's the Cardinals and the Cleveland Browns. Arizona didn't look great against San Fran last week, but got the job done. Cleveland with an absolute barn burner last week against your Chargers in that 47-42 thriller. I think this one could be fun if that Arizona offense is right this week.
100%, and should note that Nick Chubb going to miss this one for the Browns as he's dealing with an injury that's going to keep him out. So Kareem Hunt is going to take the majority of the carries. Nice problem to have if you're Cleveland. It's not quite the two-headed monster that you see week to week, Riley, but still a pretty good option to just hand it off to Hunt to take over next, right? I mean, it's not much of a drop-off, all things considered. So good for them that they have that option, but the Cardinals have been unbelievable this year offensively. They've hit their stride under Cliff Kingsbury, and Kyler Murray looks like an MVP candidate. They made a big trade yesterday. I don't think they'll get Zach Ertz in the lineup quite yet for this weekend, but a chance for the team to go to 6-0 against a good Browns team that I'm a bit surprised at 3-2. I think they would love to move to 4-2 and keep pace with Baltimore in that division, but you've got a big test on your hands against this Cardinals team this year that is excelling really on all sides of the football and looks legitimate for the first time in a long time.
Yes, sir. This should be a good week six in the NFL. Thank you for helping me out in this last half hour, Logo. You go get ready for the big show, and we'll talk
Thank
in a couple
you, pal.
Minutes.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, that will do it for Sportsnet today. I'm Riley Pollack. I've been with you for the past 2 hours. We talked to Peter Loubardius in the first hour as we get set for Flames and Oilers tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. We heard from Craig Conroy that was with Boomer in the Morning earlier today. Danny Austin chatted Stamps as they have a big one tomorrow night against the BC Lions. And then we took a look around the world of sports here in the last half hour. When we come back, it's the big show with Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. We'll talk to you Monday. Have a great weekend. It's the big show next on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.